like middle school, but you know, just kind of quarantine them all together. And so then moving back and
just quarantine all the acne together. Is that what we're thinking?
Yes.
This is episode 34 of Rhythm and Relationship. And today I have a guest host with me. Joining me here in the studio, and by studio, I mean our van parked at her college. This is Kezia.
Hello.
Kezia, you're out from behind the screen. You've got your own microphone today, and we are going to have a great conversation.
I'm so excited.
Why are we doing this?
Because we're speaking at a really fun event next week, and we're kind of getting the ball rolling. What are we going to talk about?
So I got asked to come and share at a PAC meeting, or at least that's what I thought it was. I had a gentleman ask me, could I come speak to their PAC about parenting teenagers? I said, yeah, of course, no problem. You just let me know when. He said, either in person or in Zoom. I said, person is way better.
Oh, yeah.
And then I said, Kez, why don't you come with me? You can share some thoughts about what it is being parented as a teen. And I can share some thoughts about parenting a teen, especially because you only have a couple months left of being a teen.
I know. That's crazy.
And so we've been, you know, thinking about this event. It's on the calendar. And then last week, heard from the gentleman who's planning it and said, you know, there's over 100 people signed up. We've got invitations out to our whole school. And so we better get some content together, babe.
We do.
I'm very confident that we can talk for a long time about the dynamics of parents and their teens. But I thought today would be great to have that conversation, to get going. We're probably going to do some Q&A when we meet with these people. So maybe we'll do some question and answers to each other.
Yeah, let's do it.
Like, here's my first question for you.
Okay.
Do you think you're more like me or more like mom?
Oh, I feel like I'm such a good mix. I feel like we're all quite a mix, and it's always fun hearing from people at church saying, oh, you look like your dad, or you act like your mom, blah, blah, blah. I think, I want to say I get my competitiveness from you, but,
okay,
but as more kids get into sports, I realize that mom is definitely way more competitive than she acts. So, and the kids would probably say, maybe I've got the quiet competitiveness like mom.
Okay. As opposed to loud competitiveness?
Yeah, I think that's more Sophie from you.
Competitiveness is a draw. So far you have not answered my question. Very political.
Yeah,
who are you more like? And you've just said, I'm like both. Okay.
I'm like both.
Here's one way that I think you are very similar to me, is you have a lot of different things on the go right now.
That's
like
very true.
Preparing to be a keynote speaker. And at the same time, you are working on a commissioned art piece for somebody who is finishing their grad project.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you are doing your own projects for school. And at the same time, you're doing some work for the church.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you're coaching basketball. I mean, you look across the gamut, you are definitely involved in a lot of things. So in that way, we're pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
But I think your demeanor, the way you approach things, is probably a lot more like mom.
That's
you agree?
True. Yes, I would agree.
You like quiet time.
Mm-hmm.
You like, you know, slowly, quietly working on things. You like studying over a long haul,
mm-hmm.
right, when you have a project.
Oh, I don't procrastinate. That's definitely it. You and Sophie and some of the other kids are procrastinators. Me and mom definitely just will check it off and get it done.
Okay, that's one way to word it, procrastinating.
Okay.
You just got to remember the word pro is in procrastinate.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. another way to put it is we're sprinters.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we just like
we're a long distance.
Yeah, you're plodding along. We're sprinting.
Okay.
Sprinting and then carving up for the next race.
We got the endurance then.
So, as we're talking parenting, the dynamic across generations, what are some questions that you have?
For you? I'm almost 20 and Crux is who's the youngest. He's almost 3. What, along the way, what have you and mom shifted when you communicate with us, and what's like stayed the same?
Oh, wow. Okay. So definitely there's been some things that have shifted. So when you were born, we were in our early 20s and, you know, by virtue of you being born, we had really one thing to focus on. Sure, we worked and we had, you know, friendships and things like that. But really, it's one person being focused on by two. And so I think it's great when it works that way, because you kind of get a chance to figure out how you're going to interact with your child, how you're going to interact with one another. But even last night, as I was doing some work on our very, very, very old computer, trying to keep it from dying.
So much.
I realized we've had that computer since you were in like grade two, probably grade three.
Yeah.
And so it's old and it's slow, but it also is full of all of these old files. And so I was looking at old videos of like when you and Soph were really, really young. And, you know, the smallest thing would make you both break into giggles. So some things never change. But I do think the style of communication changes as your children mature. And I'd be ignorant to say it doesn't change as you mature as parents as well. So that's definitely, you know, definitely present, that there is some shifts to conversation. You figure out what are the things that this specific child likes to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you and I have certain things that we love to talk about, maybe more than I do with some of the other kids. For instance, when you and I are driving, if I'm driving you somewhere, we can have long extended periods that are just quiet. And we're both having a great time sipping on our coffee, just enjoying, what a nice, peaceful, great day. That would just simply not happen with some
Arrow.
Of the other kids. Yeah, with Arrow, a nice, peaceful day is not sitting quietly. It's sharing every thought that you could have on a certain topic. And you know what? As much as I love being quiet with you, I love chatting it up with him, mm-hmm. because it's what he needs. So I think, you know, probably it's more child to child than it is style change over years. However, some things have changed communication-wise significantly, like electronics. Like, we can text through the day. You
That's
know what I mean?
True, yeah.
That will be just a normal thing for your younger siblings.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a normal thing for you when you were first a teenager. Like, it's slowly become more and more part of our communication dynamic. And obviously, over the last few years, is definitely a big part of it. But I think that's changed some. What we've tried to make sure stays the same is stop what I'm doing, put it all down, look you in the eye, hear how life's going, mm-hmm. you know? Definitely our life has gotten like more full. Our schedule has gotten more full. And so it's easy to have to partition our time more and more and more between little things. But presence doesn't change. You know, mm-hmm. like still being present, putting down what we're doing to make that point of connection. I hope that never changes. I hope Crux will have the same mm-hmm. experience as you've had. Mind you, he's going to be a teenager in the 30s.
Oh, my goodness.
Just let that hit for a little bit. He'll be a teenager in the 30s. He will he'll just be finishing his teenage years, dare I say, in the 40s? What is it, 24, 60? Yeah, he'll be your age as we are approaching 2040, so
assuming we're in the same high school, we're going to be going there for a long time.
Oh, babe, I have at the same places for so. I have been very present at your what was your elementary school longer than the principal and most of the teachers.
I know, and now I'm helping you coach.
Yeah,
their
year
team.
In year out. Hey, coach.
Oh man.
Longevity.
It's so funny because Zion's in kindergarten now, and he's definitely going to school with like like humor that I would have no idea. Like, you know, knowing what a good joke is when
I was
age five, I would definitely get talked to differently. He's hearing all these fun teenage conversations and jokes. And
okay, so what you're proposing is not only has the dynamic between parent and child changed, but the processing skills of the younger kids are different because of their exposure to you guys.
That's true. As we connect and communicate with you, they're in the room.
Yeah, they get to be in on more adult conversations, which is a probably got to be a challenge for you, that you have to contextualize what you want to talk about at home based on who's in the room. Do you ever feel that pressure?
I mean, sometimes, you know, it's also fun to come home and go down to their level, you know, and talk shows or whatever they did in the day, and whatever I did, I can talk later, you know? So maybe I'm quick to just, let's go back to their level, which hopefully maybe is good because they're still in elementary school and still in high school. Don't need to pull them up.
Right, but you have to choose it.
Yeah.
It means you've got to delay the gratification, if you will, of getting to talk about what you want to talk about until the context is set for it.
That's true. I haven't really thought about that. Like, Arrow could never think like that. He could open his mouth and, you know, bring up whatever happened in his day, whenever.
Well, let's just say by the time Arrow's your age, he's going to be an expert.
Oh, yeah.
At 11, he hasn't figured that out yet, but he'll get there.
For sure.
Well, Kez, I'm going to have to out us here. Now, you did, I'm sure, a great job on the back end, smoothly transitioning this, but we started that conversation 2 hours ago.
We did.
Yeah. You have since gone to a class. I've taken some meetings, and now we're back in the parking lot, picking up right where we left off. Questions about teenagers, parents, communication between the two. I know you got some more questions. Fire away.
I do. All right. When us kids, we do something, we accomplish something, whether it's school or sports or anything really, and, you know, we're feeling encouraged about that. Obviously, we're not perfect, and there's always things.
Wait. Not perfect?
I know. It's hard to believe.
Okay.
There's always things we can get better at and you would notice. If I could speak for all of us, we really value being coachable. I think that's something we definitely have a mindset for.
Mm.
And I think we all take coachability and approach it differently. So how do you approach encouraging us and giving us advice to our different levels of coachability?
Well, I think you're being somewhat generous saying that you speak for everyone in your desire for coachability.
We'll all get there.
You're getting there. Okay, you're on a journey towards valuing coachability, which I love to hear, because really it would be one of my highest goals for you kids individually. I know Mom and I, we want to see you be coachable. And part of that desire requires on us that we figure out what works best in communication for each one of you. Like, some need a quick affirmation or a quick correction, and others need it to come when there's a little more time and space. I think probably one of the easiest approaches to coaching is being a contrarian. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Talked to a coach once, and he said when coaching boys in sports, he's trying to convince them that they're not great. And when coaching girls, he's trying to convince them that they are, which is kind of an interesting, his take on the sociology of gender in sports. But I think one of the, you know, base approaches to coachability is to bring constant balance. So if you're on a high, to bring you down, well, could be better. If you're on a low, saying, hey, you did a lot of things well. And I guess maybe that's kind of at the heart of coaching, but that's not really my goal in coaching you guys.
Yeah.
I'm trying to build longer term excellence, longer term value on achievement, and not just a constant homeostasis. Don't get too high, don't get too low. I'm okay with you getting too high and really celebrating a victory well, and then revisiting it later with, hey, remember that time that you did so amazing? Here's a few things you could do better. And I'm actually okay with the descent into feeling low when mistakes have been made, or low when you have to own up to the fact that, oh, that wasn't excellent for me. Instead of like, no, it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, let's sit there for a little bit together and figure that out. And so I think the approach has to be based on a value we have, which is long-term excellence, a long-term goal on achievement, and then filtered through what makes each one of you work. You know, some have shown the propensity to be a little more rough and tumble with feedback. Some a little more gentle. And then I've watched as you guys have sort of changed. Like, I used to say of you and Sophie, and use it as kind of a comparison, that you probably wanted a little gentler coaching. Sophie probably wanted a little more aggressive coaching. However, under pressure, it switches. So when you're under pressure and you're like, you've got 10 deadlines and you're trying to, you know, do commissioned art pieces and record podcasts and get to your job and everything, you have become very okay with like quick responsive, oh, yeah, my bad, got it, on it. Whereas under pressure, Sophie has has shown the need for a little bit softer approach than she used to. You know, now with the pressures of grade 12, finishing up her sports seasons and trying to figure out colleges, and she's got a lot on her mind.
Yeah.
And so my old approach of being able to say, hey, Soph, real quick, just two things I wanted to point out, has become a little more sensitive. So it's being flexible through the seasons,
yeah,
you know, having some nimbleness in conversations.
Yeah.
And I think that keeps me on my toes. You know, the other day I was talking to someone and I was holding Crux's hand and he asked me, oh, how many grandchildren do you have? Which was pretty funny and a great reminder for me that I got to stay young. I got to stay in this game for a long time. I'm going to have teenage kids for like another, you know, 18 years or so. So I'm going to eventually get better at this.
You will. You know, you're great. Then maybe on the flip side, when we're under stress, I mean, first of all, was there an age that you and Mom kind of realized, oh, wow, they respond differently under stress? Or could you kind of tell right away? Because I think approaching when we're under stress probably is, you have to go about it a different way with each kid.
Yeah, that's true. I think, I mean, in the context of this conversation, we're talking teenage kids. And so, of course, children have the ability to experience stress, and in various ways it comes up. I think as a parent to kids, you're doing everything you can to mitigate that and to eliminate stresses. And then as you enter adolescence, walk through puberty, or dealing with some of the early stages of adult level stress, the goal of a parent is no longer to mitigate that and take it away, but help you to manage it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've no real hunger or appetite to walk Zion through stress. He's five. I want to take those stresses away. He's got a lot to deal with just figuring out how to finish his breakfast on time and get to school, you know? So why would we want to teach management necessarily? He forgets something at school. Dude, no problem. You got a bunch of things you're doing. I'm celebrating all his achievements. As you get older, if you're still forgetting things, it's time to start living in the management of that stress and go, I got to be aware of my thoughts and aware of my actions, even when I'm busy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
So I think that demarcation happens, you know, not overnight, not one day all of a sudden. Okay, now you got to grow up. But it happens as growing up happens. And I think typically for each of you kids, it's been somewhere around grade six where responsibility seems to shift onto you more heavily. Of course, younger than that, you begin to take on responsibilities. And very much, of course, we continue to share a lot of responsibilities even as you guys have gotten older. But that's about the age where we start having more responsibility-oriented conversations, you know, that you're becoming more responsible for your opinions and how you express them and how they make others feel, and walking through your own schedule and making sure you remember your own deadlines. So I think that's probably, you know, been about that line, and no real surprise that grade six has probably been a tougher year for most of you.
That's
like
so
grade
true.
Six, grade seven, those tween years, the, you know, finishing up childhood, entering into adolescence have been, you know, what most maybe call their awkward stage.
Yeah.
Fortunately, you guys, you know, looks-wise, you've been able to navigate it without too many awkward fashion decisions. But, yeah, I think there is an awkwardness in letting go of one thing and heading into the next. And then you're probably in that next...
The next
awkward phase, if you will, where it's shifting out of teenage years into adult-based decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So our conversation has changed some over the last year, hasn't it?
Yeah.
How did that feel?
Definitely, you know, it's very new. I'm always used to going into the new stages first because I'm the oldest.
Of course.
So, yeah, it's fun to hear all the conversations you go to Soph with graduating and, you know, figuring out what she's going to do after, because I just went through those two. And
right.
So, yeah, it's every day you're going to have something new.
Right. My feeling has been if we can do the season we're in well, then we enter into the next season at a place of strength. Like one of the things that shifted for you as you've
exited high school, you're now in your second year of college, is conversation shifted from you asking permission for things to you bringing information about things.
That is true. Gwyneth's
so always like, your schedule is your decision. You're not asking my permission if you can go one place or the other. You might want my input.
Mm-hmm.
You may, you know, want my thoughts on things. And there may be times where I have to say, hey, you are going too hard. You need to not do this or not do that. But generally, our conversation has switched towards information, where you're giving good information. I suppose if you resisted doing that, this transition would be awkward. Or if I was put off by that and felt slighted, like, why are you no longer asking my permission? Then I could make it awkward. But so far, it's been pretty graceful, I think.
Yeah. No, it's been good. Even Gwyneth's like, I'm so excited when I can just say, I'm going to go hang out with a friend.
Yeah.
Like, it'll happen, Gwyneth. It's okay.
Soon enough. Provided we do this season well. Gwyneth, if you're listening, let's just keep crushing this season.
Yes. And I do think, ages really affect how you communicate. Like, when I was in L.A., when we were in L.A., they have middle school, and so
such a good like speaking. Name drop, good detail drop. Back when I lived in LA,
we all lived in LA.
Yeah.
So their elementary goes from kindergarten to grade 5, and they have middle school, which we don't have here as public schools in Vancouver. I don't know, maybe private schools do.
Yeah.
Anyway, middle school is grade 6 to grade 8, and I just felt like that age group was so perfect in their own like middle school, but you know, just kind of quarantine them all together. And so then moving back and
just quarantine all the acne together, is that what we're thinking?
Yes. Just keep them all there, and then moving back in K to 7 and then 8 to 12 is definitely a big shift. So when there's parents at this seminar who have kids going into grade 8, what is some advice for that shift from grade 7 to grade 8? And then what are some points for graduating students?
Right. Well, I think a shift from elementary thinking to secondary thinking. In elementary thinking, the teachers and coaches and principals, administration, are communicating with the parent, bringing support in the way that they're preparing their kids. When you shift into high school, they communicate with the student and require the student to inform their parent. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's a real shift. As a parent, it's a real shift. You go from teachers reaching out to you saying, here's what our thinking is about our schedule, about a field trip, about your child's behavior, whatever it might be. Switch to high school and it's, you should let your parents know about this.
That's true.
And so one of the things would be like administratively. We have parents reaching or teachers reaching out to us. Do you want to pay for pizza day? You know, in elementary. Get to high school and it's, hey, dad, can you please pay for this? My teacher said to make sure you know that it's due today.
Yes.
So it's an interesting thing. As a person, I don't love administrative tasks. You know, I don't love
really
having tasks thrown at me necessarily, or, you know, it's just not a way that I'm geared. I'm like, oh, we'll get to that when we get to that. You know, making a plan for what day we'll do the parent-teacher conference in a month, we'll figure it out in a month. Why are we worried about that right now? So it does shift because now you are the one, as the high school student, who's putting me in that administrative headlock as opposed to a teacher. You know what I mean? So that's been different. That's a little bit interesting. And then I think the other piece is, for students understanding that as you get older, teachers are requiring more and more of you. Mm-hmm. You know, so in an educational sense, teachers are expecting more of you. They want you to hit the deadline. In elementary school, if you don't hit a deadline, it's kind of the teacher's fault. They take it really personally, like, I'm falling behind schedule. You hit high school, and it's like, well, it's your fault. You guys were talking, you know.
Yeah.
It's your fault. The flu season came. It's like it had nothing to do necessarily with the students, but the attitude shifts. And then you now see in college, it's completely the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Your professor is not taking it personally at all if you hit deadlines or get good grades. That's not even really their responsibility.
Yeah.
They're like, I will lecture and then I will leave.
Mm-hmm.
It's on you. And I think, you know, there's that progression. But in each of these new seasons, it is a joint commitment on the part of both the parent and the teen So now things have changed. You know, some things are going to stay the same, mm-hmm. like a value around how we communicate, respect, you know, all those types of things, honesty. But some things have to shift in terms of ownership. And mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty big thing.
For sure. Yeah. When I got to grade eight, we didn't, this is just personal, not advising it, but we just didn't do the parent-teacher conference with all the teachers in high school because you had to plan like with all the different teachers.
Right.
Each class instead of one teacher, so it was just difficult.
But it shifts from we need to speak to you to if you need us,
yeah, if you're
let
curious
us know.
And stuff. Yeah. And I remember my younger sibling was like, oh, why aren't you going to go? And my mom was like, oh, well, now Kezia can come home and tell us how she's yeah. doing. And if we hear otherwise, that'll be different. But
right.
like, it's her responsibility. She always shares yeah. what's happening.
So. I mean, to you guys' credit, you keep us in the loop. Mm-hmm. If you didn't, that would really change the dynamic
yeah,
if I'm like, I need to speak to
know.
Your math teacher because
yeah,
I don't know what you're doing in math.
Yeah.
But, you know, I definitely know what people are doing in math. Because we're talking it through at the dinner table.
Yes. also, thinking about the seminar, so we've really touched on that each kid is so different, and we have a big scope of that mm-hmm, with mm-hmm. eight kids. But there's going to be parents with one or two kid, so they don't really get to notice that right away. How would you give them advice to be aware of the how they respond to being, like, how they like to be communicated with?
Well, I think that for parents, one of the biggest struggles that they each face is feeling FOMO on behalf of their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts like from the very beginning. Do they have enough friends? Are they
yeah.
doing enough activities? Am I exposing them to enough things? I don't want it to be too many things, but you know, is music and dance and a sport and an art class and a socialization and a play date? And is that going to be enough? Is it too much? That balance is a real thing for parents. And I think having a bigger picture perspective on some healthy rhythms and some healthy time management and some healthy energy management is pretty big and important. And what we've noticed is, you get a few days into a spring break and you kids become the best versions of yourself again with a little more rest.
Mm,
you know, you become a more true reflection for good or for bad of what you're actually dealing with because you just get a little more rest. And if we push, some of those stronger elements, both good and bad, get kind of muted out by just the white noise, if you will, of a busy, packed, full schedule. And so I think being okay as parents with being the bad guy and saying, no, we don't do everything. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel bad about it. And I don't take on that FOMO feeling. I'm not going to engage in it because it's my responsibility to see you become a healthy person, not to make sure you get to keep up with everything. Like, I've had to disappoint each of you repeatedly when it comes to restricting some of your freedoms and schedule, right?
Mm-hmm.
Over and 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 over. Like, it's just part of parenting, saying no. And I think if you struggle to say no early, it gets more and more difficult. You say yes to everything early and you're kind of stuck in that mode where
right.
you're the one keeping your kids from experience, keeping them from having fun. And so I think, I'm not sure this directly answers your question, but keeping you in a zone where you're at your best. So healthy rhythms, you're eating right, you're sleeping right, you're navigating disappointment well, not holding on to bitterness towards mm-hmm. fellow classmates, teachers, you know, you're keeping a short account on things, you have one or two things that you're really working on developing and getting better at in each season. I think that for me is a bigger goal, is keeping each kid in their sweet spot so that they can actually communicate openly
yeah.
and not hit that point where they start to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the flip side, parents, if you're listening, you got to teach your kids not to be bored. Don't be ruled by boredom. I see it happen over and over and over and over again in families that are being driven by the boredom of their children. And the biggest fear would be, I just never want my kids to be bored. And so you got overstimulated kids,
and exhausted parents who are trying to essentially turn their home and schedule into a circus to keep them entertained, and they get diminishing returns. So I really think less is more on stimulation, less is more on schedule keeping. And some people might look at our schedule and laugh at that, because sure, we still fit a bunch of stuff in, but none of it's driven by boredom. None of it's driven by, if I don't do this, then what am I just going to do? Sit around? Well, no, you're going to maximize your time self-developing, working on areas of passion, growing, you know, exercising, all those types of things. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges, is keeping everyone in their sweet spot.
Yeah.
And like for you, for instance, your sweet spot probably involves a little more socialization than some of your siblings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are what I call a quiet extrovert.
Yes, like, a listening extrovert.
Yeah, like you get energized being around social environments, relational environments. It's not in any way depleting to your energy, even though you might be the quiet person in that group.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas some of your siblings are the flip side. They might be the loud person in the group, but boy, it took a lot out of them. I heard someone the other day talk about it this way. They said when it comes to energy management, some people are givers and some are defenders. So some people are like, I got so much energy, I want to give some away. And then some people are, I have a max level of energy and I got to protect myself from having it taken away. And I thought that was an interesting way to put it. One's not better than the other.
No.
Both are trying to make sure they stay full and that they don't overexert themselves, but a different approach. So learning those things and observing when your kids are young, when it would be easier to say, just look at a screen and be quiet and stay out of this room because it's chaotic. I think learning those things young really makes teenage years better.
Mm-hmm.
And my belief has been, and you're going to be the first test case, is that, you know, staying very present and observant in the teenage years is going to make our adult friendship and relationship so much stronger.
Yeah. Okay, this is kind of a random question. What's it like communicating with our teenage friends? Like, we're so blessed to be able to bring them to church and have events we can invite people. What's it like communicating with other teens as your kids' friends?
Well, that's a great question. I haven't thought of it too much.
Because some parents might find that stressful or just like don't want to embarrass them or, or really got to push and...
Yeah, I'm not super concerned about embarrassing you guys.
For sure. And you would never. But for a parent who would stay out of it.
I hear what you're saying. Okay, so I have worked with teenagers for...
That's true.
A long time. I was a youth pastor before I turned 20, which is kind of funny. First youth pastor job, I was like a part-time intern as I was in Bible school. And I was advised, don't share with the youth what your age is just yet. Like, wait till you turn 20.
Really?
Yeah, they're like, wait till you turn 20. Like, the don't cool bring age. It up now because you're still a teenager yourself. So that's kind of funny to look back on. So I've been engaged in relationship with teenagers and in and around it, coaching, youth pastoring, planning events since I was a teenager myself. So I don't find it that awkward. However, I think one of the biggest transitions for a parent is you don't have to be cool. Cool is not really one of my goals. I don't need to be a cool dad. You know, I hear this meme that's passed around a lot. I don't know whose initial audio it is, but I've seen a lot of parents share this with their own content and video over top of it. It's kind of funny, but I don't really agree with it. They're like, the reason I work hard out and the reason I'm staying healthy is I want to dominate my kids for as long as possible. Like, I want to be physically greater than them. Okay, that's kind of cool. Like, I guess. I'm competitive too. Like, I'm not letting you guys win things that you wouldn't naturally win. But my goal is not to be young dad or cool dad. I just want to be your dad. You know, I want to be what you guys need me to be. And what you don't need is another buddy. You don't need me to be your pal.
Mm-hmm.
You need me to be your dad. You know, like even in the scripture, it talks about in a spiritual sense that you have lots of teachers, but not many fathers. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's easy to find information, but impartation that comes from a parent,
like true inspired leadership that helps you figure out who you are and figure out your identity. You don't get that from your friend group. You don't get that from someone who's just a great teacher over the course of one semester. That's my job. So cool is not really my greatest task. I don't really care if your friends laugh and think I'm the funniest guy. I definitely don't feel the pressure to, you know, throw no cap into conversation so that people go, oh, wow, he gets it. Like, I'm your dad.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. But I also am not going to be intimidated by feeling out of touch with this era, you know? I don't do TikTok, but I'm not going to be intimidated talking to a generation that does.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to ask questions. And I think my hope would be whenever your friends are around that they find themselves in an elevated conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That they go, oh, wow, you actually talk to your parents about stuff. You get asked questions, not just about what's next, but how you process things or how you're feeling about things. You get brought in and asked your opinion of stuff as well. Like, I want to learn from you guys. I want to know what you're thinking. And so I want to engage that way. And that's really, I guess, my goal when talking with your friends when they're around too, is that they feel like they were in an elevated environment where they got closer to an adult level conversation. Of course, your friends are adults, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah, that's really good. What, like, a toddler wouldn't be able to explain their wants or needs, but sometimes teenagers, they aren't vocal or aren't even aware of what their wants and needs are.
Right.
Obviously, there's a difference between saying yes and no to a want and to a need, but how would a parent go about, like, trying to figure out, like, start open the conversation of, like, okay, what's actually bothering you, even if they're not aware, the teenager right. themselves?
It's funny. As I get older, the difference between toddler and teenager gets less and less noticeable. When I was a teenager, being a toddler just feels like, you know, an entire lifetime ago. But as you guys have become teenagers, it's like, oh, you were just toddlers a couple of days ago. Like, it was, just happened. So it's a slow progression, I guess. So, sorry, your question is differentiating wants from needs?
Yes. And then also, they're not vocal about it. How do you start to address
right.
what's well, bothering them?
I mean, most of the needs that you have when you're young, I've decided that they're needs. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
A toddler believes they only need cookies. That's sufficient nutrition. They're wrong. So I decide that need. They believe that they don't need sleep when they do, or that they don't need correction when they do, or that they don't need, you know, any of those types of things. So it is a trust process that goes, I guess, both ways. You're just going to have to trust me that this is important. You need to eat this vegetable. Like, you just got to. You got to learn how to eat meat, dude. you know, like, you can't have an issue with chewing because it's chewy. You need the protein that's in this. So eat it. So it's a trust developed towards your parents. And I think if parents are consistent, hopefully that trust becomes pretty easy. You're like, well, they know best. And then it's a trust that goes the other way, that you begin to get inquired of, and, you know, what's a preference that you have on this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's a desire you have on this? I'm not going to force you to continue on in a sport you don't enjoy as a teenager. As a kid, I might say, well, you signed up for it, stick with it. But as a teenager, if you don't want to continue on that, don't. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't prefer doing a drama class, then don't do drama, unless your reason is fear-based.
Yes,
you know, that's a big
yes.
thing for me, is I don't want to see decisions made on fear. I don't want fear to be a motivator at all. I'd rather make decisions around passion and around value systems than fear. And so probably for each one of you, I've pushed you to overcome fear pretty often. Like, mm-hmm. okay, let's figure out why. Well, I just don't want to. Okay, well, where's that coming from? You know, where's the I don't want to coming
true.
From? And if it's based on fear, then we at least have to clear the deck of fear before we decide if that's a good decision. You know?
Yeah.
As a kid, I know it's not. So you're just going to listen to dad. As a teenager, I want to help coach you out of fear before we go from there. One thing I said in my sermon this Sunday, I was talking about
parenting and a different style. And, you know, for some of you kids, it's been easier to just say, okay, if you think so, I agree. And for others, not so much. Mm-hmm. You know, I joked about Sophie, and it's a pretty true joke. She, more than any other kid, has used the statement, I disagree.
Mm-hmm. I was going to bring this up.
Yeah, I disagree. Dad, I disagree. I'm like, hey, this is what I'm seeing. She's like, okay, well, I disagree. And I don't see it as disrespectful that she says that, because she's going, I don't think you want me to just pretend you're right and roll my eyes in my heart. Like, we want agreement, right? And so, you know, where she might say, okay, I disagree. And then it invites me to lay out the case better. So she comes to agreement. And when she does, then she really does. And she's really locked in. And we joke about how it took her a while to get there. So I think as a parent, stay patient. Like, stay patient with a more disagreeable kid. I find it quite easy because I was that kid. So it's pretty easy for me. I have no real, you know, issue against that, because the heart desire is, I think we want honesty. I think we want to be on the same page. So it's going to take me a while to get there. Lead me there. You know, I disagree for now. So lead me there.
Yeah. That's so good. I feel so bad for my friend, like even over COVID, my friends that just didn't have a good relationship with their parents. And yeah, all these conversations that, like, I wonder if they did happen, or did they just shut themselves out? Like, do you think proximity, if a parent is feeling, well, I don't really communicate with my kid, or is proximity a really good factor in starting to build that? Or is there another factor that also, like, we don't have a pandemic to shut kids into a house and be forced to see their parents?
Of course, proximity is a big part of it. But it's proximity with quality as well. Mm. You know, if there's a brokenness in conversation and then you're stuck in the same room, it doesn't mean that you automatically converse better. You know, you need to find on-ramp to a smooth conversation. And so I think, you know, ever more weighted on the responsibility of the parents is to find points of connection. You know, when earlier generations were growing up, technology, for instance, was changing at a pretty slow rate. You know, like, if you grew up and you rode a horse to school, chances are your kid also grew up riding a horse to school. You know what I mean? If you grew up in the thought of, if we want to go anywhere, we're going to need to book a train ticket and block off a month to get there. If that was normal, it's probably normal of the next generation as well. But the instantaneousness of information changing now is so much different for you guys than it was for me. And I'm not old yet, even though that guy thought I might have a grandkid. I'm not old yet. You know what I mean? I didn't have email when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
I didn't have email. I didn't have a phone number. You know, the other day somebody asked me, Titus was getting his learner's license, and they're like, hey, Dad, what's your cell phone number? And they never asked what my home number was, which is good because we don't have a home number. But when I would go in, you wouldn't have a cell phone number. Like, it was the home number. So myself and my parents all shared the same phone number. Like, just think of how different that is for us than it is for you. So the generation changes. And as the rapidness of technology, like, doubles at a quicker and quicker and quicker rate, I think it's more and more incumbent on parents to not get stuck in their ways. At least that's what I feel as a parent. Now, my question for you is, as a teenager growing up, what responsibility did you feel to keep our relationship close?
Oh, definitely. Well, yeah, kind of relates to technology. I definitely felt the need to text my mom throughout the day, just especially as I got to do more and more sports in high school and everything. And
keep her in the loop.
And I would come home and she'd already be asleep or getting the boys to bed, and we just didn't have a... I'm like, wow, we didn't even talk today. And that would be very hard on my mom. So definitely that was a value, was I'm just going to text her what I'm doing throughout the day. And usually we have, like, little fun questions as we go and that little conversation. So that kind of relates to the technology thing. That's something very new. And then also, I think early high school, I was very, like, if I had a test, I would shut myself in a room and I would just study. Right. And I just needed that time. But then as I got better at time management and stress management, probably, I think by like grade 12, I was very like, when I'm home, let's play a board game. Let's be home. I can study later in the evening anyway. Like, it was definitely like, when I'm home, I'm going to be in present.
Right. I mean, that so blessed mom and I, and continues to, because it's something that we worked on with you, 13, 14, 15. Like at those ages, that was probably one of the things that we'd say, this is a thing Kezia is working on right now. Mm-hmm. Her character's amazing. You know, she has a lot of skills in different areas, but this is one of those skills we're trying to help, is to be present where she is and not thinking about the next thing she needs to do. So it was a joy to watch you embrace that. I'm going to say one more thing and then you got to get back to class.
I have my lecture.
Last week, I taught a course for Theos U about team dynamics and leadership. And I think it really always applies, you know, pastoral ministry, parenting, leadership in an organization and parenting. There's always a crossover. But one of the things I shared there that I think is true here as well is the things that discourage a parent are maybe not what a teenager thinks they will be. A teenager thinks making a mistake will be a huge discouragement to a parent. I would hope as parents, that's not a massive discouragement when our kids make mistakes. That's part of being human. Mm-hmm. Humans make mistakes. Keeping secrets is more discouraging than making mistakes. You know what I mean? And so I think the things that are discouraging to a parent are when character is not being developed, when secrecy and rebellion and attitude are present, not mistake making, not having questions. That's why I'm not bothered by, I disagree, Dad, because, okay, then it's on me to help bring some agreement. Let's keep on working until we're on the same page. And then the other thing I said to leaders, and I think the same is true to parents, it's not your kid's job to encourage you. Like, I really don't feel like that weight is on you guys at all. I need to have enough courage as a father to have an overabundance and share with you. It's awesome when you do. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I like it when you guys are encouraging. But even when you're not, it's not like a built-in responsibility that I'm an insecure dad. So if you don't tell me I'm doing a good job, then I feel less than. Mm-hmm. I need to have enough courage in my own conviction and calling and who I'm trying to cause you to be that I got an overabundance. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was talking to a leader recently about, you know, mentorship. They said, oh, this person's like a father to me. And I was like, oh, that's a cool thought. Now, if that's true, fathers give, they don't take. You know, if you're seeking mentorship from someone and you say they're like a father to me, then that relationship probably is such that they're giving to you, not that you're having to pay for it. Does that make sense? Fathers give, they don't take. You know, kids take, they don't give. And as you become adults, I guess there's a little more symbiosis. But really, my relationship towards you guys forever will be to give. I'm happy to do it because, you know, we chose for you to be in our life. We chose for you to be the people that you're going to be. And so I don't need you to encourage me. It's awesome when you do, but I need to find enough courage that our relationship is never such where you feel pressure to encourage me. You're doing a good job, Dad. Like, cool, but I shouldn't need that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I need to find that overabundance as a believer. I mean, that's got to come from the Lord. As a Christian father, that's got to come from my conviction in who I am as a son of God, as a child of God, my responsibility to build you up to be the men and women that you're called to be. So it's a good conversation.
That was so good.
You do have another class to go to.
I do.
So you should get there. This will be, I guess, maybe the basis of our seminar.
I'm excited.
So we got a few days. We should probably put some notes together.
Yeah, let's do it.
When we thought it was a 14-person Q&A, we're like, oh, we'll have a coffee and chat with some folks. Now there's 100 plus, and they're expecting a PowerPoint. So
PowerPoint.
We should probably get this thing together.
Here we go.
Thanks for chatting, babe.
Thank you.
And thank you for those of you who are listening. If you have any questions for us, we would love to engage and talk back and forth. You can reach out to us at Justin and Jennifer Reimer on Instagram. And while you're listening to this, if you enjoy it, review it. Like, put some stars on it.
Share it with a friend.
Share it with a friend. You know, help us get it out there.
Thank you for listening to Rhythm in Relationship. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And if you enjoyed it, share it with a friend. You can connect with Justin and Jennifer by following them on Instagram at Justin and Jennifer Reimer. DM a relationship question and they'll respond and just might feature it on a future episode. If you're looking for more inspiring content, follow Vivid Church on YouTube or Instagram.